This is Arizona Station, 1010 KXXT, Tolleson, Phoenix.
It's the summer of 2011. Why not change? Why not your company? Why not now? Really? What will it take for you to change and improve your life, your capabilities? It's the summer of 2011. Running out of excuses yet? In this unpredictable economy, is this business as usual? No, this is turnaround business time. Time to improve in the summer of 2011. From business services to technology, marketing to productivity, sales to employee morale, nonprofits to associations, this show addresses today's, not yesterday's, critical topics essential to you and your company. Guess what? In this economy, embrace change or it will continue to confuse you. Leapfrog Forums, taking it to the next level, has been created by and for business challenges, changes, and success stories. Come and talk with us about the vision of change you are living and how that is taking your company to the next level. Let's get our friends and family members back to work now. How? Step up as a change advocate champion and share your innovative and collaborative successes in the workplace with us on air. Tell your story. Leapfrog Forums, taking it to the next level. Innovation and collaboration for growth and jobs. Accomplishing together what we cannot do alone. Call the boss at 602-859-0048. 602-859-0048. That's 602-859-0048. And visit us at www.leapfrogforums.com. www.leapfrogforums.com.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is an expanded edition of the Real Estate Panel starring Terry Cass from Cass & Lund Commercial Group and Chris Gray. Of course, as promised, here's the big debate we have, of course, in this corner. Oh, I shouldn't say it like that, should I? Wes Gullett, of course, running, all three are running for mayor for Phoenix, City of Phoenix. Of course, Jennifer Wright, nice seeing you again.
Good to see you.
Yeah, and you were here a couple weeks ago. And, of course, Anna Brennan, you've been on for about 10 minutes now. And, of course, we saw you a couple weeks ago. So here's the rules. Let's get the coin toss started. Chris, flip the coin. Okay, I'm just kidding. All right.
Santa Rosa.
Yeah. He has a two-headed coin. Okay, that's not going to work. Anyway, we're going to ask some questions. Get anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes, I'll let you know. And then sometimes we'll have a rebuttal portion also. So we'll try to get enough issues in because people have to know what the differences are or not. And and I think that's real important. We'll start off, though, however, with introduction, just 30 seconds. About a little bit about who you are in 30 seconds or less, and since less rhymes with Wes, go, Wes.
Hi, I'm Wes Gullett, and I'm happy to be here today. This is going to be a fun debate. It's the first time it's been the three outsiders as opposed to the insiders, so we're going to have some fun. Hopefully, Anna won't beat up on me too much about being the insider. And Jennifer and I already had a discussion about that. So I haven't been on the city council. I'm a small businessman. I want to be mayor so we can have a focus on job creation and getting government out of the way of businesses and reducing the size of government.
All right. Thank you, Wes. Jennifer, a little bit, 30 seconds or less about you.
Thank you. My name is Jennifer Wright. I'm a native of Phoenix, born and raised. I went off to college at Marquette University. For the past 10 years, I've been working for organizations like the Institute for Justice and Goldwater Institute, where I've been identifying the onerous regulations that are getting in the way of business growth and development here in Phoenix and across the state and across the country. So as mayor, I'm going to focus on three key areas: jobs and opportunities, safety and security, and fiscal responsibility.
Thank you. Wow, you were under the three. You went to Toastmasters, I'm sure. Anyway, Anna Brennan, a little bit about you, 30 seconds or less.
Hi, and I'm Anna Brennan. And I challenge you to get to know me by calling me at 480-280-9238 on a personal touch and also visiting my website at abformayor.com. I'm running because I am one of you, and I want to engage you into the process, the great process of American democracy. And it has to start with our cities. And what I've seen as far as the contestants that are running in this mayoral race, exactly contestants or cast of characters, I think we're done with that, and that's why I am running. As a small business owner, as a mother of four, and as a citizen, I want to give you the voice back into our city government.
Well, thank you. All of you did so well with that 30-second time limit. I'm really impressed. Okay, this is going to be three-minute rounds. And no rebuttals on this, but 3 minutes. We'll start with Anna. And if I raise my pen, it means you're out of time. So don't let my bouncer, Chris, get excited here. Okay, Anna, what is your, and the same question for all three of you, what is your perception of what is most important to the residents of Phoenix and the surrounding areas, and what specific actions will you take to make their lives better?
Well, the buzzword right now, and I think because our housing industry has crashed, jobs. And jobs are first and foremost on everybody's mind. And the way we're going to get jobs started is, and get people working again, is by getting government out of the way. We do have a lot of hoops that people have to jump through to get started on business. And not only that, but it's very, very costly. So as mayor and having started two businesses and also having to fight City Hall on a zoning case, I know how cumbersome the regulations are. I know how costly the permitting are. And I plan to roll up my sleeves and go through that with Dave Cavazos, our city managers, our planners, and all the people that are involved in this, not hire some outside firm to do this, but to go through our books and streamline it so it's easier for people to start a business. And with that, I have to add that unless we have our city is managed properly, we can't even run our city properly. So we do have to address our union issue, our immigration issue, because those all fit into our budget. And if we don't have a budget that works, we're not going to be able to do the very first thing that government is in place for. And city government is to, one, protect its citizens, and two, to provide the essential quality of life issues that makes a civil community. And that's our libraries, that is our parks, and our swimming pools. So you might hear all these, you know, we have a 7-point plan, we have a 10-point plan, and the question is, who can deliver? And I believe that I am the person that can deliver because I've been a consumer at all these different avenues where I've been stuck in the muck, and I'm ready to get people moving them back to work.
All right, nice. 3 minutes right on the dot. I like that. Okay, Jennifer, here it is again. Same question. What is your perception of what is most important to the residents of Phoenix and the surrounding areas, and what specific actions will you take to make their lives better?
Well, as I mentioned in my introduction, I've got three areas that I think are most important, not only to me, but to the residents of Phoenix, and precisely why I decided to enter this race, and that's jobs and opportunities, safety and security, and fiscal responsibility. Jobs and opportunities, I've spent the past 10 years looking over onerous business regulations, excessive taxation, various different permitting fees, fines. And what I'm going to do is do a thorough audit of the city codes and review and try to eliminate any that don't actually have an actual health and safety need for them. So many laws are passed for economic protectionism. I've seen that firsthand with the work I've done with the Institute for Justice and Goldwater Institute. And that's why I'm going to do not just what I need for myself, but what we need as a community. I've been helping small businesses get up off the ground for quite some time now, and I'm going to continue that when I go into office. I've said throughout the entire campaign trail that small business is the backbone of our economy. Small businesses, every single major corporation started as a small business. You never know what the seeds of entrepreneurship are going to bring. So as mayor, I'm going to make sure that we are encouraging small business growth and development. That's going to bring us the jobs and opportunities we need. We saw that coming out of the 70s and into the 80s when we had deregulation, when we had the Reagan era. We had a focus on small business growth and development. And as mayor, I'm going to do that. Safety and security, we need to make sure we do not have any sanctuary city policies, either written or unwritten. Right now, we've got the police officers are unclear about what their directives are, enforcement of immigration in particular, of when they detain someone for committing a crime and their immigration status can't be ascertained, we need to make sure that they've got a process to get them through. And despite what Obama just penned through with his executive order, we need to stand firm here in the city of Phoenix against illegal immigration, especially those where crimes are being committed as a result. We also need to hire a police chief that's going to enforce our immigration laws and hire a police chief that's going to employ the broken windows philosophy of policing. And that was successfully done in New York City. That's one of the precise things I'd like to make sure is implemented. Finally, fiscal responsibility. For decades, and none of the outside or insiders are here, but our opposition has been rubber stamping the budget for the 10 years they've been in office without ever seeing a line item budget. We have got to get fiscal responsibility under control. And that means as mayor, I'm going to know where every penny's coming in from and where every penny's going out from. I'm going to implement open book accounting systems so that the citizens of Phoenix can see for themselves where the money's coming from and where it's going to. And we can identify any mismanagement or excessive spending. For instance, we've seen sister cities trips that have been excessive. We've seen roads that have been built to areas of the community that are for specific developments. That's not what city dollars should be spent on. And as mayor, I'm going to put a clamp down on that kind of activity.
Well, thank you. Again, under the time limit, I'm impressed. We're going to give the extra time to Chris. Now, here we go. Wes Gullett. Same question, 3 minutes. What is your perception of what is most important to the residents of Phoenix and the surrounding areas, and what specific actions will you take to make life better for them?
There's no question. When I'm out talking to people, knocking on doors at town hall meetings, that the economy is really the most important thing that people are. They're scared. They don't know where their jobs, if they're unemployed, they don't know how to get a job. If they are employed, they don't know if they're going to be able to keep their job or how long it's going to last. And we've got to get the economy going again, because that's going to, right now, Phoenix and Arizona have a higher unemployment rate than the nation. We've lost 250,000 jobs. Texas, on the other hand, has added 550,000 jobs. So obviously somebody's doing something right. It's not like everybody has lost jobs. So what we've got to do is look at the examples of people who are doing well. And why is Texas doing well? They've held the cost. They've held the line on cost. They're open for business. They've gotten government out of the way of small business and entrepreneurs. And they have created an environment that is vibrant and says, we are going to get the job done. We can do the same thing here in Phoenix. And we can get a hold of the cost of government. We can reduce the cost of government. I've been talking about how we can save $50 million throughout this campaign, and we need to do it. We need to get our fiscal house in order so that then we can lower the permit costs, lower taxes, so that we can open up the entrepreneurial opportunities for people, get government out of the way, get all the onerous problems that Jennifer was talking about, repeal those. I've got a plan to sunset ordinances so that we actually eliminate those ordinances. And that any ordinance that we put into place that has a sunset of 4 years on it, so that we can revisit it with the next mayor and the next city council, so they can no longer say, oh, somebody else, that was somebody else's problem. They did that way before I came here. We hear that way too often. We've got to constantly be putting these rules and regulations. I was out at a polling place the other day, and I looked at, according to Phoenix Ordinance G3078, you can't do this. Well, we need to repeat 3078, and if it was already up to G, man, that's a lot of ordinances. and we've got to work to reduce that kind of burden, and that's going to open up small business. And we've got to work with our banks. We've got to work with we've got to have a procurement plan that buys locally, that encourages buying locally. There's no excuse for us not to have a procurement code in the city of Phoenix. There are so many things that we can do to get the economy going again that we've got to get on them right now and be urgent. And That's going to be an important part of the as soon as we hit the ground running.
And you got it under 3 minutes. Very good. Thank you so much. Now I'll ask one more question, and then we'll have Chris and Terry chime in. So get ready for your questions for the candidates for the mayor for the city of Phoenix. My last question is this. I may have one more question, actually. Who would make the best mayor other than yourself, and why? And who would be the least effective mayor other than yourself, and why? I bet you haven't heard a question like that before. Anyway, I didn't study NLP for nothing. But anyway, so I'll repeat it again. We'll start with Jennifer. Who would make the best mayor other than yourself, and why? And who would be the least effective mayor other than yourself, and why? 3 minutes.
Well, I would say that the boy, you're making us compliment
yes.
our competition.
Well, Jiminy. We're changing the climate.
All
right.
Right. So you know what? I'd have to say that
you want me to start?
No. I would say that I think Wes Gullett would make the best mayor next to me. So I obviously believe that my vision is a better vision, but of the other candidates, I would vote for Wes Gullett. It's hard to say who would be the least effective. I know who I feel would be the most harmful to Phoenix, and honestly, that's Greg Stanton. I don't think that he's a bad person. He just has bad ideas, very progressive, very leftist ideas that would drive Phoenix to a we're already under budget constraints, and everything I hear coming out of Mr. Stanton's mouth is talking about how to increase city spending, whether it's on various different programs, hiring exorbitant amount of people to be on his personal staff. We need to make sure that we're cutting down the spending and not increasing the size and scope of our city government. And as mayor, that's what I'm committed to do, is making sure that we've got the least amount of government interventionism, the least amount of government, to make sure that we are focused on the core essential services, that we're no longer putting our police and firefighters through the game of we're going to cut that, you know, because we need to have budget reductions. Well, quite frankly, one of the quickest ways we could have a huge budget reduction is eliminating the elections department. We could be having our elections that are happening right now in the same time period as with the other elections, and then it could be run by the county recorder's office rather than the city of Phoenix. The county recorder has a ton of experience in managing elections, and what I've found so far with the Phoenix City Elections Department is they're having they take a lot longer to process the ballots. Getting the data from them for campaigning takes longer. So clearly they're not as efficient as the county is. And in fact, in even the requirements to become a candidate, the hour I had to sit down with two staff members with the elections department to go through what the requirements were to become a candidate was a little bit overkill, considering a Senate candidate, you go online, United States Senate candidate, you go online, print the forms, fill them out, and turn them in, and you never have to talk to anyone at the county at all. So I guess going back, I don't know how many minutes I have left.
You have about 1 minute left.
1 minute. Wow. Well, I'm not going to belabor this too much. I think that the other person whose vision is close to mine would be Wes, although, I definitely have my disagreements with him. But I want to make sure that we as Phoenicians look forward to what does need to be done. And while Mr. Stanton talks a lot of good game, especially about education, the mayor doesn't have any control over the schools. And to make the effective changes that we need to have in our school system requires changing within the school system, not having the city get involved in the process too much.
Well, thank you so much. And Wes Gullett, same question. Let me repeat it. Who would make the best mayor other than yourself, and why? And who would be the least effective mayor other than yourself, and why?
Well, the reason I said I'd start is Jennifer has done a really good job of articulating the issues. I think she would do a good job as mayor if I had to pick one of the others, because we clearly need change. There is no doubt about it. Anna would do a good job. She'd be our voice, but I think Jennifer would do a nice job of being breaking down that system. It's been 28 years since somebody from outside the city council was elected mayor. For 28 years, we've elected somebody who's been on the city council. That means they've been educated in the process. And they have been spoon-fed the information. They know the rules and the Phoenix way of doing business. And for 28 years, that's too long. Because if you can't bring outside vision to this, if you can't bring a fresh set of eyes to the city of Phoenix, we have got a problem. I agree with Jennifer that Greg's vision is exactly the opposite of what we need today. Greg Stanton, he has a big government vision. His first debate, he said that he believes in an expansive role of the mayor's office and of government, and that expansive role of government we can't afford right now. It is exactly the opposite direction that we need to be going. We need to get our fiscal house in order. We need to look within to find the money that we can reinvest in programs that they've cut to protect employees. Greg wouldn't do any of those things. His idea is that we need to wait for the economy to recover. And if once the economy recovers, then we'll get new revenue. But he's got all these plans. Now, there's only two ways that that can happen, all of his plans. He has 27 things that he's going to do the first day. The first day, he's going to do 27 things because he wants to do everything and be everything to all people. So when Greg does that, he's going to have revenue, and he refuses to cut and refuses to come up with any ideas on how we can save money. So that means we're going to have to raise taxes.
Well, thank you, Wes. Thank you so much. And Anna, same question, 3 minutes. Who would make the best mayor other than yourself and why? And who would be the least effective mayor other than yourself and why?
Oh, I had to think about this one. I'll go with, I'll put my vote with Thane Eichenauer, and I'll just leave it at that. For, let's say I'm playing a chess game here, okay? Now, who would be the least candidate?
Least effective
is Greg Stanton, and I'm sorry. Greg, you're a nice guy, but you have treated the taxpayers like you are a used car auctioneer. You have when at debates, you don't really answer the questions. You stay on your points that you want to just hammer out without engaging, without even a thought process. And that kind of governing, I think, has gotten a lot of taxpayers disenchanted. And you are part of the status quo, and I feel adamant about this because the reason I am running was because I had a friend call me from San Francisco and say that you wanted him to be his campaign manager. And I said, call Greg back. Tell Greg, before you're mayor, Anna Brennan's going to run for mayor. So I am quite adamant about this. I think that Greg would hurt the city of Phoenix. He is for more government regulations, and he's not sticking to what's at issue here. By continually touting education, it's same old Greg, not wanting to face the issues, but just pick a hot button, and the hot button happens to be education, and so that's all he sticks with. I won't take the full 3 minutes, but I'll leave it at that.
Well, it's unanimous. Okay, so let's go to Terry or Chris. Who wants to start off with the next question?
I'll go.
Okay, go ahead, Terry.
I pay a lot of attention probably more to national, and I should be more local, but I've noticed that people running for office do not like to touch the sacred cows of cutting. And one of your questions is, what would you cut? And I noticed that nobody will go on record and cut the things that need to be cut, and everybody, at least nationally, will cut the things that don't have an effect on anything. What would you each cut in terms of the sacred cow that is unpopular but has to be cut or will never balance the budget?
And we'll start with Wes, 3 minutes.
3 whole minutes again, huh?
Or
the,
two.
I'll just do two. But I've got a lot of stuff that I'd cut. But it's cutting with a purpose, and you've got to have. There's got to be a reason for why we're doing this, and one of the goals is get rid of the food tax. So we're going to cut the food tax. Now, okay. How are we going to pay for that? That's a better question. Our managers get two pensions. They get a regular pension, a defined benefit pension, and they get a 401A plan, which is like a 401K. and they don't have to pay anything into it, and they get 6 to 9.6% of their salary put into that secondary pension. It costs about $20 million a year. We need to get rid of that. You get to pick. We want to encourage them to take the 401A, and we want them to contribute to it as well, and get them off of the defined benefit pension plan. But we don't want them to have both. So we've got to eliminate the two pensions. You only get one pension. So that's cutting about $20 million out of the system. We also need to have performance-based pay for our employees. Instead, what we did was we gave 89.6% merit increases and 98% longevity that were eligible for either or. That's really a cost of living increase. Instead of doing that, what we ought to do is have a performance-based pay that rewards the 30% of our employees that go above and beyond. And if we did that, instead of 92% getting a cost of living increase, 30% got a performance increase, that would be a two-thirds savings on that total, which would be about $16 million. Those are two specific ideas. Jennifer talked about an idea that I forwarded a long time ago about we've got to get rid of this election in the odd-numbered year and have it with the state elections so that the mayor and the governor are on the same ballot. And that way we don't have to have 25 or 26 polling stations that are open for just this election and then replicate the whole thing over again in November when there's only going to be one thing on the ballot. It doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Wes. And same question, let's go to Anna. You want to repeat the question?
Sure. No, it's okay. Like, what would we cut? You know, and being an outsider, I can't go into specifics, but one of the things that I would say is we do have to look at our budget, and we would go to zero-based budgeting where we would absolutely look at every line by line. And if a department yearly needs to justify its existence. You know, are they doing what they are supposed to be doing? Are they cost effective? Are they actually making a difference with the department? So I think that is definitely one of the things. I think the food tax, definitely everybody, the food tax of course has to be eliminated. And if you eliminate the food tax, then there was no way that you could give the $29 million merit or longevity raise. Other things that I've looked at is an 8% cut across the board, just salary reduction. And again, not always attacking the city employee, because what dummy isn't going to take a nice raise or a nice job? But if you would sit down and you had a rapport with the employees, you could say, this is what it's going to take to keep Phoenix running. So that would be one idea, is to cut 8% across the board, because, and still, Phoenix employees would be ahead of the game in reference to private sector employees. The other thing is to eliminate jobs. You know, David Cavazos himself, he has 5 assistant deputy managers. Well, when I fought the city on a zoning case for 6 years and I spent a lot of time with Frank Fairbanks, I'm not even sure what Frank did, let alone to warrant having another 5 employees that are getting between $180,000 and $200,000 a year also. The other thing is, in cutting employees, there's about 5,000 jobs that could be eliminated, and that would give us $100 million in revenue. And then again, I am right on board with everybody. I think that the citizens are disenchanted with our current system of government. So I'm not sure exactly where to pinpoint the fact that only 74,000 voted for the last election. But if it's because of when it's being held, I would definitely say move the election to the even odd years. That would save money and would get a lot more people voting, because a lot more people would be here.
Thank you so much. And Jennifer, same question.
Well, I think I started at one point talking about one of the cuts that I would make excuse me, and that's the elections department. We do need to look at that. We saved, I think the city is claiming $300,000 to move to these voting centers when we could save millions of dollars by not having to print out separate pamphlets, not have to print out separate ballots, not have to have all the staff to process and deal with it. We could save a lot of money by moving elections to the even-numbered years in the millions of dollars. And I've also had the benefit of looking over what the Americans for Prosperity has recommended in some budget cuts. And they have some great ideas on where we can have some things. One of the things I found out through this process is that, I don't know if you've been to Encanto Park and the concessions that are sold there. Did you know the revenue from the concessions of the parks go to general fund? So it doesn't get used to pay for the park itself or to make sure that the park is properly maintained. We need to encourage these kinds of concessions, and we need to encourage develop. You know, when you sell something within the park, then it needs to go back to revitalizing that particular park. And I would like to see more concessions at more parks. As a mother who goes to parks all the time, one of my favorite parks is right near my house, Grenada, and I'm hungry and thirsty there all the time. I'd be so happy if there was a hot dog vendor or someone there that I could buy food from or buy water from. So we've got an opportunity here where we don't have to cut services, because that's always a focus. Do we cut services and deprive people of parks, or do we find innovative ways to bring in free market concepts into what we have? So can we have concessions at various different parks? Obviously, that wouldn't work at every little neighborhood park, but even a vending machine would probably provide some revenue and be a way to help pay for the parks themselves. We also need to make sure, again, that that money that's spent at that park stays at that park, because putting the money back into general fund does not have development into that park. We've seen Encanto has some needs for some redevelopment. And it would be nice to know that when I go and spend money to be on the train there, go buy food, that it's going to be reinvested in Encanto Park and not be sent into the general fund for the city managers to have run away with. In regards to other changes I'd like to see made is we need to cut the administrative bloat. The fact of the matter is that the majority of the salaries that we have in our city governance is going to the middle management. We have one manager for every six employees. I was talking to one police officer that has two managers for every six employees. You know, there's seven layers of management within the city police department. We can get more boots on the ground and less boots behind the desk and still have better services and cut a lot of the spending that's going on there. We need to be more effective with the dollars that we are spending. I'm not opposed to looking at the services and seeing what maybe needs to be privatized, but I also want to make sure that we're not wasting money in the process.
Thank you, Jennifer. Okay, Chris, you're up with the next question.
Well, I guess everybody has, you know, the whole job thing. So then maybe I'll ask something with that. What is it that you feel maybe is a problem or two with becoming a small business owner? What are some of the problems the city has? What is some of the thicket that we could get rid of? You know, and what maybe are a couple of your ideas to fix that broken problem?
We'll start with Anna. Let's go 3 minutes.
And again, it happens to be that it's complicated. It's expensive. We have permits that are not that easily understandable, and I would, again, go to a one-stop shop online. I would have it so that when you do go to the city that you're not being passed from one department to the next department to the next department, eliminating frustration and confusion. That's pretty much the biggest thing. Having started a restaurant or two businesses, it needs to be easier. It can't be complicated, because it's already scary to undertake going into business, because you're afraid to leave your job. A lot of times I know, and I think a lot of business owners, they continue doing their job as a security blanket, and you kind of figure, okay, what's the very minimum I need to make so that in case this doesn't fly, I can pay the rent and whatever expenses I've incurred and still put food on my table. So the one-stop shop and making it easy for people to see exactly what is required of them would be key. I've heard that it And this is coming from Sal DeCiccio. He's on the city council right now. And I quote him, $8,000 to open a yogurt shop in permitting? That's ridiculous. Why would you have to pay that much money in fees? And then in regulations. An example for me was that when I was opening my business, I knew that you needed a hard non-porous cleanable surface. And yet when it came to getting an occupancy permit, the inspector came through and rubbed his hand along the formica and said, this needs to be stainless steel. And because I had read the law, I said, well, no, it needs to be a hard, non-porous, cleanable surface. And he said, well, you know, I prefer stainless steel. And I said to him, sorry, give me your checkbook and we will put stainless steel. You know, those kind of personal agendas, non-common sense issues have to be addressed. And then as far as if we go beyond small business, if we had a vision, I think that we need to use our solar energy. And I foresee a city that is engaged in the hustle and bustle of solar power trolleys that we could possibly manufacture here and bring in a whole new industry that would get our citizens back and working. Again, through the private sector, because I am a stickler for using private sector and encouraging them to risk their money, but I would work with them to encourage this kind of entrepreneurism. As is, am I almost up or no?
Yes.
Then I'll stop and I'll give you my next idea on the next go around.
All right, thank you so much. Chris asked a question again to Jennifer. Jennifer Wright.
Did you want me to repeat the question, Jennifer?
Was it how to get the government out of the way of businesses, basically?
Yeah, basically what? Yeah, that in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, and thankfully for the last 10 years, last decade or so, that's what I've been working on, is how do we get the government out of the way of our small businesses?
In other words, how do we not make it cost 8 G's for a guy to open a yogurt shop?
Exactly.
And 4 months.
Right. Well, yeah, and right now the process is taking 3, 6, 12 months. And part of it is we've got conflicting rules and regulations. I'm working right now with a small business owner, Mirko Massini with Cafe Italia. And he had a situation where he thought he got all the permits that he needed with the county. Well, it turns out he also needed to get permits with the city. And there's conflicting regulations. The county wanted him to do it one way. The city wanted it to do another way. They had 15 people sitting at a table, and nobody could agree which way was the right way to do it. So the two city agencies were basically in a match of sorts to see who was more important than the other and to see who would have jurisdiction. And in the meantime, we've got a small business owner who spent thousands of dollars to build a grill so that he could serve his customers carne asada, and he can't because neither city will allow. The county and the city are arguing over what the rules are. And this is what we need to look over, is what are the conflicting rules and regulations between various different agencies that are keeping small businesses from thriving? What are the various different laws that are in place that, like I said before, that are unnecessary, that don't have a health and safety violation? We've got so many sign ordinances in the city of Phoenix that have very little effect on the safety of a business, but have more to do with keeping free speech out of small business. You know, in regards to whether or not you can put a banner up in front of your Mirko wanted to put a banner up saying, yes, we're open because it looks like there's some construction going on. And he had to get a special permit, and it's a temporary permit. And you'd have to go through another set of forms and regulations because there's so much going on at his location, it looks to the outside person that his business isn't open. So he's losing business because the city and county are arguing over what needs to be done. And he can't put a sign up saying, yes, I'm open. You know, this is the kind of rules and regulations that are getting in the way of our small businesses. We need to make sure, too, that the Development Service Department is retooled to actually work with our small businesses. Right now, you know, there's a lot of need to – they've had a 50% reduction in the number of permits they issue. They've got a lot more time on their hands. There's a lot more need to maybe utilize their time to do code enforcement, to kind of stand in the way of businesses and tell businesses everything they're doing wrong, but never once giving them an idea or a solution or a way that they can resolve these issues while following the laws. And we need to retool the development services so they actually help the businesses through the process and not roadblock them.
Thank you, Jennifer. And Chris, same question to Wes.
Yeah, Wes, that same question. But you touched on a little bit ago, Wes, that you had an idea of maybe even if they didn't cut the fees, maybe if they recharged them once the company's up and running. What was your
right.
Could
right.
you elaborate
well,
on that?
Yeah, we've got to reduce the fees that these guys, so that the $8,000 to open a yogurt shop doesn't exist. It costs $10 to open that yogurt shop. The reason why we need $8,000 to do it is because we siloed off the development services department. We said you're going to be an enterprise agency and you have to pay your own way. So they're required to earn enough money to pay their own way. And so they have to charge fees. And where do they get the fees when people start businesses? It's upside down. What we need to do is have it be so that it's inexpensive to start your business, because it's hard enough to buy all the things that go into your business. And with the credit crunch, there's no money out there.
Right.
So we've got to get government costs down, and then we'll make the money back on the backside when they're employing people and those people are living in Phoenix and they're buying stuff and spending sales tax. We'll get the money back. We've got to grow the pie. And that's what these guys don't understand. Our opponents have been on the city council for 10 years. They believe that it's a zero-sum game. It is not. The answer is not in the pie chart. The answer is outside the pie chart. The answer is not in whether or not is carving up that pie. It's growing that pie. It's making the pie bigger. That's what makes the city great. And if we have an entrepreneurial sense in the city, challenging people to come up with ideas to make it easier for business to succeed, then we will be successful. That's what we have to do, and we have to have leadership that can go do that. The work that Jennifer has done on Cafe Italia has been incredible. She's been talking about it. She brought it to the attention of the world. The Arizona Republic did an editorial and didn't even mention her. It wasn't – I felt so bad for you because they were lecturing us on this is what you need to do. Well, Jennifer had been working on that. And it's ridiculous the way that these permits and fees work. I've been working helping a woman who owns a coffee shop up on Deer Valley Road. She's having trouble because her power bill is such that she can't she can't get it evened out because she doesn't qualify. So that's a huge impact. Maybe the city could use some of the money that we're spending on ridiculous things and spend it in a way that helps small businesses who are actually gathering the sales tax in for us to be able to meet their obligations and just guarantee it, just back them up. That's all we're saying. That's the kinds of things that we need to do.
That's time. But I was just going to say real quick, I can, even being a layman or a lay person, whatever, I can answer why the Arizona Republic didn't say anything. It's politics. Because mm-hmm. if they'd have said something about, wow, did you see Jennifer? Yada, yada. It was the greatest thing. And she brought it up. Then they would be digging the people that are in office now. It would be a little dig to them. So I don't know. Just my thought. All politics, right? Let's get the politics out of politics, somebody said.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
We were talking about that off there. Anyway, it sounds like you're all in agreement with that, which is going to be good news for the residents out here that want to start businesses. Now, Terry has left momentarily, so I'll step in for him and ask the next question. This is only 2 minutes, and we'll have a rebuttal so for 2 minutes, but we'll keep the time short since time is flying. I want each candidate to ask the other candidate, any of the other candidates, a question that they've been dying to ask them but were afraid to ask. So let's see. I'm full of surprises. Let's start with I don't think we'll start with Jennifer here. We'll start with Wes.
Well, the questions I'd like to ask are of the three people who dodged this debate today, because they've got a lot to answer for. And, it's unfortunate that they didn't show up. It's unfortunate that they that Greg Stanton, with some glee said, I've done 30 and this is my last one on Friday morning when we were on TV. Greg Stanton attacked me for something that was completely false today after last week, saying, I've never gone negative in this campaign. The people who've been on the city council for the last 10 years have a lot of questions to answer. And I don't think that Anna and Jennifer are the ones. But I will ask Jennifer this. I was wondering about it the other day. So what do you think about the Road to Nowhere and Peggy Neely's involvement in that? And can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I've been up to that area of town and looked at what's going on and looked at the documentation that's been seen. And we can see that, Peggy Nelly has some strong ties with various developers. And there was a road plan to be built that would have connected with the 303. And it was the southern route in which the vast majority of people in that community wanted it. I lived for a while up in the Cave Creek area over at about Tatum and Cave Creek and Lone Mountain. So there was a lot of talk about this road that was going to go through to the 10 even at that time, or 17, excuse me, at that time. And from what I can tell, Peggy has decided to build the road on the northern route, which happens to dead end at a Westcor property. And this is just the precise kind of problems we're seeing with the city council, with the city government, with the three competitors that chose not to be here, is they put their special interests first. They put the people that donate to their campaigns, whether they be lobbyists, whether they be unions, whether they be developers, as the people that they want to please. I, myself, want to please the taxpayer. I'm not concerned with whether or not I make friends in business and whether or not I make $1 million on the side. All I'm concerned about is the taxpayer.
Thank you. And now let's go to Anna. What's the one question you wanted to ask any of the candidates but were afraid to ask or didn't have the opportunity to ask? What would that question be and to who?
I guess one of the biggest question is, how do you feel that while we were pitted against the Greater Phoenix Chamber of Commerce and we were both excluded in the last debate, how do you feel that I have been the brunt of completely being excluded? One was by the Green Chamber of Commerce, who actually invited me, and then when I got there would not let me speak. But more importantly, the Tea Partiers, that even though they're not supposed to endorse a candidate, they've decided to endorse you without even letting me speak as a conservative Christian candidate, and they will not let me into their circle.
Who are you asking that to?
Oh, Jennifer, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. You're on.
Well, I didn't know about any of the other exclusions, and at the Green Chamber of Commerce, I was shocked to see you in the audience and not on the stage, and I was only told afterwards by Colleen that you were excluded, and I find all those exclusions to be horrific. You should have not been excluded from any other debate. I had no idea. There was another debate we were at. I don't know if you were excluded or not, but Cox, I didn't see you there, and I didn't realize any of these exclusions occurred until after the effect. And I think that it's wrong to exclude any of the six of us in any of the debates. And in fact, came out with a statement prior to the chamber saying we all needed to be included, which included yourself as well, Anna. And I think that it's important that Phoenicians hear from all of us. We're all candidates running for office, and I support the fact that you've entered this campaign and you are, in fact, a qualified candidate on the ballot, and you deserve to be heard. So I did not know about any of the other exclusions until after the fact, and I think Greg Stanton Peggy Neely attacked me for not speaking out on those, and I didn't know they had happened until Peggy Neely mentioned that you were excluded. So I think that's not a good thing. And regarding the Tea Parties, they haven't endorsed me. They support me, but I've also been with the Tea Party groups since 2009. So I think that it's, I'm sorry that they're not letting you speak, that they shouldn't be excluding you. But their support comes from the fact that they've known me for a long time. I'm not a new face to them. I'm somebody who's been working with them since the Tea Party started.
Thank you.
Just a little disclaimer in that, just so everybody knows, all the candidates were invited to hear, and actually initially were all going to show up, but something came up, I guess, with Peggy, Claude, and Greg.
The old dodge.
But we have you folks here, and I greatly appreciate it, and I really appreciate all your hard work and efforts, and I know any one of you would probably make a great mayor.
And we're not over yet, though. With Jennifer, the same question is, what question would you like to ask any of the candidates that maybe you haven't asked before? Go ahead.
Well, I think I kind of have to agree that the big questions that need to be asked are to the candidates that chose not to be here today. And I think that's shameful in the sense that Phoenicians deserve to hear from all of us. There's been very few opportunities where we've had either a televised or on-air debate. This was a great opportunity for each of those candidates to be here to let your audience know why they should be mayor. And I think it really speaks volumes to where those other candidates are at in regards to their campaigning. I think it's important we do hear from all the candidates. That's also why I was very upset at the exclusion of Anna in any of the debates and myself. So the question I'd like to ask the ones that aren't here and they're not here to answer is what exactly has changed in their mind, their thinking that they're going to improve the city of Phoenix? They've been a part of the problem for the last decade and combined 30 years, and they have created the mess we're in. And now they're talking about either fixing it or making it worse, I think one of our opponents' philosophy is that nothing's broken here. It's all, let's stay the course. We're doing just fine. So those are the questions I like to ask them. I don't know if I have any questions of the candidates here because they've been very forthright in their positions.
In that,
I'd love to answer the question about what they ought because it is this arrogance of the insiders that they don't need to come. They're tired of this. And when we set this up, I had different things on my calendar. I needed to move things around. I did it because you know why? We need to be out talking to the public. And it's kind of refreshing not to have them here and listen to all of their new ideas that they haven't done for the last 10 years. You know, they've had 10 years, 30 years combined time to come up with all these ideas and implement them. And never once did they make a motion to move the meetings tonight.
You know, in that, I don't think an analogy with that is, I don't think I've ever heard of or seen a prize fighter that wanted to go in the ring alone and be called the winner because the others didn't show up. So I would think that anybody would invite the other prize fighter to the ring. So I don't know, just my little...
All right, good comment, Chris. We're going to vote for you for mayor. All right, here we go.
Chris, it's too crowded already.
How much time do we have left? About 5 minutes, 6 minutes? And we have, 6 minutes, perfect. 2 minutes each. Let's start with, where did I leave off? I think Anna was, no, Wes. No, it's Anna's turn. 2 minutes, why you would be the best mayor, go.
I think I'd be the best mayor because I sense the taxpayers' frustration, and I truly, in my heart, along with the taxpayer, believe that lobbyists, lawyers, career politicians have brought our country and have shaken its very foundation. And because of that, there's a lot of disenchanted voters that have given up completely in the process. I am an honest person. I am an immigrant. So I speak Spanish and I speak Italian. Oh, by the way, I am a legal immigrant. I have to say that. And because of that, I bring a unique philosophy to our issue of the border and illegal immigration. Two, as the daughter of elderly parents, I understand what it's like to live on fixed income. My parents live on $1,100. And guess what? They make it. They do it. There's nothing wrong with a hard day's work. And as a small business owner, I bring the perspective that you can hear people giving examples of like Cafe Italia or different business owners. I own those. I own those experiences. So I come with a passion that I am here to put on the boxing gloves, going back to what we were talking about. And I am here to be the voice of the taxpayer. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Jennifer.
Well, you know, it's funny. One of our candidates who isn't here always calls himself the optimist of the race. And I think the fact of the matter is that none of us would be in this campaign if we weren't optimistic about our city's future. The point, though, is that we're at a crossroads. We're on a road toward prosperity or a road towards ruin, in my opinion. Both at a city, state, nationwide level, we've seen spending, tax and spend policies get out of control to the point that our nation is going to bankrupt itself. Our city could, in fact, bankrupt itself. I wouldn't be running in this race if I didn't think I could bring to the table the skills necessary to make sure we got onto the path to prosperity, to make sure we didn't continue the tax and spend policies that have brought us into this economic recession. We have overexpanded the size and scope of the local government, the state government, the federal government, and I want to make sure to come in and change this on a local level. And we change the city of Phoenix, the sixth largest city in the country. It can be a model for what cities can do all across the country. We don't want to become the next Detroit that's falling on the wayside. We don't want to be one of the 20-plus cities in this country that have filed bankruptcy. What we want to be is one of those cities that move to prosperity, that start seeing green, and that's what I'm going to do as mayor of the city of Phoenix.
Thank you so much. Wes Gullett.
You know, I think I can be the best mayor because I come at this from a career of experience of dealing with tough problems. And when I worked in the governor's office, we were faced with the very same situation where they said we've got a structural deficit. We've got to raise revenues. We've got to do this. We've got to borrow more money. And we said no. We cut the cost of government. We cut taxes. And we got the economy going again. And we grew the pie. We created opportunity. And that's what I want to do with the city of Phoenix. So I've had that experience. And then I've had the experience in the private sector of actually having to do it to feed my family. And come up with creative, innovative ways of applying new ideas to business and organizations and coming up with strategies and then implementing those strategies to help companies and organizations be successful. That's what I want to bring to the city of Phoenix. I want to bring that business principle with the understanding and know-how of how to move a large organization, and I know that I can do a great job being mayor. I'm still trying to get a handle on this candidate thing, but I know that I can be a good mayor. So if I succeed at being a good candidate, we're going to have a great city, and we're going to make this the greatest city in America.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for all your participation. Wes Gullett, Jennifer Wright, Anna Brennan, thank you so much for coming on today and giving the listeners some choices, some options. That's what it's about, right, in America. And, of course, August 30th. Election day, get out and vote, unless they have already on early ballots. However, you got to get out there. We want a higher participation than in the past. I think that's very important. And, of course, thank you to Chris Gray. Thank you, Terry Cass. And I just really appreciate all three of you. And it whoever wins, whoever doesn't, at least you're making an impact at some level. That's what's important. That's what the world needs. You all are true great leaders. Thank you. Chris, any final comments?
I was just going to say thanks a lot. I truly appreciate y'all answering my invite and showing up and staying the course. Thanks a lot, Terry.
Thank you. Very impressive.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, of course, we'll be on again tomorrow for our sports show. Anyone a sports fan here? We'll have to get you on there. And
Larry Fitzgerald, $120 million contract renewal.
Wow, we'll have to get you on the show. Now we're talking. Boy, Kevin Cobb comes through, doesn't he, in more ways than one. Anyway, everyone have a great night. Get out there and vote on Monday?
Next Tuesday.
Next
week from
Tuesday,
today.
Of course, August 30th.
From today.
Have a great day, Phoenix.